Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay and it is my pleasure to introduce to you today a very well-known speaker, Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Today we'll look at the unusual subject of social conscience. The purpose of this show is to ask you to take a good look at your own conscience to see whether what you do on the inside and what you think and feel on the inside matches your speech and your behavior on the outside. We ask you to look at your own value system, your own code of ethics, and to ask yourself the simple question, has the person that you've become, the person that you see in the mirror every morning, does that work for you? Or should you be re-looking at your own ideals, your own morals, and look at reconsidering your approach to life? And we've also noticed that although most people in any given situation have the intention of doing the right thing, they still tend to act against their own conscience. So to this end, I would like to welcome Sister Denise. Welcome. Very, very warm welcome to the studio today.
Thank you, Magla.
And please tell us, social conscience. I must say it's not something that I have ever thought of. I have one, but I haven't given much thought about it. One just tends to go on in the way one has been taught to. Okay? So what is social conscience and why is it necessary that we develop it as a human nation?
Let's start with a bit of a definition of social conscience, because, as you say, it's not something people much think about. I think a social conscience is when you observe something not right, something that's against your conscience, and you feel, okay, this needs to be put right. I'm not personally responsible for it, but somehow by seeing it, by knowing about it, one is implicated. And because of being implicated, it raises a red flag within the conscience, and then we have to think about, okay, what should I, can I do about this? And then you have to think, you know, in terms of the laws of karma, how this works, in terms of, is there anything possible that I can do which would make any difference? What cost would I pay by, you know, raising my finger against something that's going on? Because definitely when something's happening, it's not happening to you, but you're seeing it. It means there is a system in play for allowing it to persist. And if you start to raise any objections, then there can be a lot of negative energies that come towards you. So for that, you need to be prepared, you know.
Mr. Denise, is it spiritually correct to think of oneself as one's brother's keeper?
I think it's not quite a black and white thing. We have to create some boundaries. We're not responsible for other people totally, and yet we have some responsibility, and we need to actually define, to what extent am I responsible? Yeah. You know, you get situations where something is happening, maybe some violence is happening in an apartment next to yours, and you know about it, so therefore you're kind of obliged to do something about it, but what? You know, because sometimes when you go in, those who may be having altercation with each other, they start focusing on you, and you then become the victim. And this is why a lot of cases in you get where police will say, no, I'm not going to go in there unless we're specifically called, because the result of doing that is not productive. And so I think when you get situations where, you know, or a child is being abused or something like this, you know, some people, they have this idea, you know, that the most important thing is not to get involved, because if you get involved, then you'll have to give your time and energy and so on, and they don't want to do that. So that's a little bit of a selfish approach, but it's extremely widespread, and it's become a kind of norm that close your eyes, close your ears, because, you know, it's too much trouble to look after somebody. But then I think that you are to blame in a situation like that, because you could. And you also get many situations where someone with a social conscience did the right thing. You hear the story of how the situation came out positively because of that person's social conscience. So there are messages from both directions, you know.
How does one who sees something going wrong in which he or she is not personally involved, how does one gauge whether which line one should cross to help? When does help become interference?
Well, I had a situation, just to give you an individual example, when someone came to me, you know, and when someone comes to me, then I'm not just a third party. Someone comes and says, look, you know, according to your position, I am calling on you to help me, because I'm in this very difficult situation. I need someone to accompany me. So then, you know, I could have responded in a number of ways, and I chose to respond according to my social conscience, which was immediately to say, yes, I know very well that in this kind of situation it is very good to give you the support and so on. But there were other people in my contact who had very strong objection to this, because it sort of disturbed the social norms. And for the other people, not disturbing the social norms took a higher priority than for me, because for me, to what I call do the right thing in such a situation, takes a very much higher priority than if the society would say, do not show us up to be bad, because we don't want to be shown up to be bad. So what happened in that situation is that it cost me a lot. But I kind of knew that that would be the case, and I'm ready to do that.
You were ready to pay the price.
Ready to pay the price, because I feel that a very heightened social conscience is a very good thing. You know, I come from, perhaps you can call it, a liberal approach to society. And if somebody is being violated and they call on me for help and I can help, I will. You know, and then if people object and they start to go against me because of it, then I just have to manage that, because I have lines, you know, and I will not cross those lines, even if it costs me a high price. And that's, I think, a personal thing. That's my position on that.
So, Denise, when is it okay to offer one's help even though one is not asked? My reason for asking this question is the following. You get people who are born helpful and kind-natured, okay? But when does helpful cross the line to become interfering? When does kind cross the line to becoming just downright silly? Okay, and how does one, what yardstick do you use to measure whether that line has been crossed or not?
One of the difficulties is that serious interpersonal problems are occurring very frequently in a very widespread way, And there are a lot of people who are afraid to ask, or who may be under threat that if they ask, this or this will happen to you. So what happens is, if you feel to help, but you're not educated in how to do this, then you will make mistakes. The people who know very well, the social service and so on, they have that education, and maybe there is a case for making that kind of education very widely available, because on the one hand, people will be taught what is the right way to go about it, and on the other hand, I think that would be preventative, because then everyone, the victims, the perpetrators, the observers, whatever, are then aware of that whole dimension of human problems, in a way that I think at the moment society in general, prevailing social attitudes, prefer people to be in denial and to say this thing doesn't exist, and therefore we don't need to teach anybody about it, it's highly specialized. But I would say that that situation might have been the case quite a few decades ago, but at the present time it's not. Another thing which is helpful in this is that all this debate is being spoken about a lot in the media, on the social media and so on, so that even if the more conservative powers in society would prefer it not to be out in the open, but it's coming anyway.
I see. So Denise, so if one looks at oneself internally, would you say that somebody who does not have a social conscience, who lives for himself, is that not spiritually the right way to be? Or should one have a aspect of one's personality where you do feel that it is my duty to make a positive contribution to society? The one expression that works for me is, your relationship to society is such that you're either extracting from it or you're giving to it. Now, what do I, as an individual, owe society?
This covers really something like our social contract. And yeah, I think that we receive a great deal from society. It's very important to give back. And I think that while a person's private life and their personal spiritual practice is a very personal thing, at the same time, to isolate oneself and to justify not fulfilling one's social duty is actually faulty logic, faulty moral logic, and that one cannot justify that. But the thing that's important is to really be part of the debate on this and open it up, so that it is being talked about in order to establish new norms where a good social conscience is understood generally to be a good thing. At the moment, it isn't really.
So Denise, explain to me how the law of karma fits into this picture. I have a sense it fits in somehow, but I'm sure the listeners would want to know, if in terms of my own karma, my life is good, okay, but the people around me, not so good. How does a social conscience affect that law, or come into operation in respect to that law?
Well, there are a lot of complexities, and to be able to calculate the right thing in a context that is very complex is too hard for most people. But there are plenty of people for whom it's not too hard, and I think that the law of karma also applies to society and its stratifications. For example, it is said that if a person is in a position of high authority with a lot of responsibility, then they are held responsible for their actions to a much greater degree than someone in a socially lower position or professionally lower position. and consequently they would be called to task and they may be punished for wrongdoing to a much higher degree than someone who may be much more ignorant. And I think that that's very valid because people look to the leaders in a society and they follow that lead, you see. So that if a person finds themselves in a high position in a society with a lot of power and their actions influence a lot of people, they are much, much more accountable. So the law of karma does figure there, and if you do not act where you should act, you will be penalized for sins of omission, just as you will for sins of commission.
Okay, now that is a new term. Please tell us more about what one ought to do but has not done. Tell us more about that, because I think most people are familiar with the sins of commission. I do, and I get punished, maybe not immediately, but in time. Now you're saying law of karma applies to that as well?
There is a concept of duty, which is also social duty.
Is that the same thing as the duty of care?
Duty of care is part of it. Maybe okay. It's the Anglo-Saxon terminology for the idea of just duty, which is maybe a more old-fashioned type of word. But in India, there is this term dharma. And dharma is very often translated as religion, but that's only a section of the meaning. Dharma also means that according to my social position, according to my privilege and so on, there is a dharma in the sense of a social duty. And that dharma is articulated. So you can very clearly go against it because it's articulated. Sometimes people will rather not have it spoken about so that they do not have to fulfill those duties, but the duties are there and it is articulated somewhere in the writings of the moral philosophers. So that if you are, the more you're in a higher position, the more it's written about that this is your duty. Duty that if you have food and someone outside doesn't, and you knowingly keep it for yourself, you have enough and then some, and you prevent another person from sharing that, that would be a sin of omission. That would be going against the dharma of hospitality. So to not be hospitable when you really should, and by not being hospitable you cause that person suffering. So in spiritual practice, these things are talked about. Sometimes a question will be asked, okay, we have food, there's lots of people outside who don't have food, too many for us to feed, what should we do? And then the elders will say, we should share. Because if we don't, the conscience will really react against that. And even if it's just a little bit for everyone, there's this idea of personal sacrifice being part of that dharma, that if I'm to be truly loving, I need to be able to have less in order that others can have some. That is a very good karma.
You shared about somebody in the position of authority is being held to a higher standard. If a person is academically gifted, is it their duty to teach? If somebody is fabulously wealthy, is it his or her duty to donate? If somebody is a brilliant pianist, is it his duty to offer a concert or two so that people could come participate in his artistic talent?
Yes.
So is your answer to yes to all of those questions?
Yes to all of
them.
Okay.
So are you saying that which has been given to you by not necessarily material things, but gifts, the intangibles, it is your duty to share that
yes,
as well?
Absolutely. Because of recognizing and acknowledging that this is a gift, you know. When a person says it's mine and so limits it from the society, it means you haven't seen the wider picture that you have because you have received and you have more than everybody else. You have special gifts, special privilege, you have lots of money. You have it because it has come to you from the world, from the earth, from the people, and so it's definitely your duty to give back. If you don't, then the society becomes dysfunctional and the distance between those at the top and those at the bottom is so great that it becomes unmanageable and then there is a breakdown in society. So it's very important to keep the gap between the wealthy and the poor, the educated and the uneducated, within limits. Once it goes past a certain point, it becomes wrong.
Mr. Denise, I remember when the tsunami hit, one of the things that happened is that people were so shocked about it. In certain countries, there was the headlines, where is God in all of this? Why isn't he doing something? Okay? Now, for God to make the headlines on any day is a miracle by itself. I have to ask you this question. Does God have a social conscience?
Very interesting question. You know, people believe that natural calamities are acts of God. And so it is concluded that if some really terrible thing happens and many people die and are injured on a large scale, then this is, you know, God punishing people. But then they don't see why should these people get punished. So then they say God got angry or God is being unpleasant or nasty to people, and that means he should be called to account. So they complain, you see. And this is because the religions have explained God in that way, and then the people extrapolate from those explanations and come up with the question, where is God in all this? And so I think that we have to really re-look at what does God do and what does God not do, and if there is a massive natural calamity, which is what people want, is where to point the finger, who is to blame for this, you see. And that is something that people won't rest until they have found somebody to blame.
So what is God's conscience vis-a-vis humanity? What is his role? What is he obliged to do for us, give to us? Because he is a lot, has a lot,
yes. God is very reciprocal. This is something a lot of people don't quite understand.
Reciprocal, give and take.
Reciprocal means you love God, God loves you. You don't pay attention to God, you know. Because the law of karma also applies to God. Even though God does not do any act per se, because God is not part of the machine of the human world of action, interaction, birth and rebirth and all of that. So God is very clear about who he, she is and what has to be done when and how and to what extent and so on. But the people may not be party to that clarity, and they may have a very different take on it, and this is where there comes antagonism between people and God, or you get people who say, well, if God is doing this, then I don't believe in him, or something like that, you see. So I think the problem around God is the description and definition that has been given causes people to believe those descriptions which may not be accurate. So then what God will say is, these very terrible occurrences are the Earth's reaction to the cumulative negative karma of people. And so it's not that God is responsible, but the accumulation of negative karma of people produces this, because it's the karma between the people and the earth.
Okay. So Denise, my last question for you, somebody who has fully embraced spirituality, what is in your social conscience as regards humanity? What do you give to humanity because of all that you have received?
Part of my studies discuss this, and we are taught that, you know, you have the ability to receive so much, you have to be a conduit. So that what is received is not just for the self, but it has to be passed on as widely as possible. And nowadays, we are studying a lot about, through the mind, how to fill the atmosphere with positive energy, because the atmosphere is the context in which people do action. And when people experience an atmosphere of fear or violence or something, they react to that atmosphere. Now, if we can spread spiritual vibrations, peace, love, calm into the atmosphere, then that actually nourishes people and calms them from that reactiveness. So that is actually quite a subtle form of service, but it's definitely something that we are asked to do. And the second area is to educate people as much as possible, so verbally, to try to convey these ideas so that people are not reacting due to ignorance.
I feel compelled to ask you, do you serve people just through your presence?
I suppose it's required, because your presence is, it contains the accumulation of qualities and energy that you've received from God, and so that wherever you are, you will definitely radiate something, and that radiance can and should be of service, yes.
Okay, on that high note, unfortunately we have to bring today's conversation to an end. Sister Denise, thank you. This is an exceptionally riveting subject. It's such a pity that we only have half an hour. I could sit on this comfortable couch and listen to you speak about this subject the whole day. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, something called a social conscience. If you yourself have not thought about this before, you're not alone. There are many who haven't thought about it, but Sister Denise says that every single individual, irrespective of your geography, age, religion, level of education, etc., whatever gift you have received, it is your duty to share it with the world. Sister Denise also shared something quite unusual. She said that one could even share and affect an atmosphere through the mind, and that's something that I'd like to take up on a different occasion, because most of us don't think along those lines. But the most beautiful note on which Sister Denise ended today's talk is that one can share just with one's presence, but that is if you are leading a spiritual life, because you'll be called upon to share that as well. So lovely message, and I hope that this has some impact on you and your life, and I hope that you feel inspired to give more towards humanity, because you will be one of many who will be benefiting from your own sharing. Mr. Denise, thank you so much for a fascinating half an hour, and we hope to see you again soon. Thank you and goodbye.